Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah Chav Ches. We are on the very top of Chav Ches Amad Aleph. The Gemara had been discussing and will continue to discuss the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. Once we hit the midpoint of the second parak of Sukkah, Chav Hey, so we turned all of our attention to the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. So we have been spending the first 3+ weeks of the Masechta talking about constructing a Sukkah. And then, of course, now that the Sukkah is there, so there's a mitzvah to sit in the Sukkah. So for 7 days, there is a mitzvah in the Torah to sit in the sukkah. So our focus is going to be on the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah. The Mishnah all the way back in Chaf Hei talked about the Peturim, who exactly is going to be exempt from the mitzvah of the mitzvah of Sukkah. Then, of course, after discussing exemption, we talk about how often should you be in the Sukkah and what's required in terms of meals. So that's the Mishnah in Chaf Zayin. The Mishnah in Chaf Zayin said that Shitas Rabbi Eliezer is that you're supposed to have 2 meals a day in the Sukkah, a requirement to have 2 meals a day in the Sukkah. Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say that the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah is a mitzvah kiyumin, not a mitzvah chiyuvi. It's simply a mitzvah to do it, but we're not obligated to do it. That means to say that you can opt into eating in the Sukkah. If you're not interested in eating, if you just feel like you want to go a couple days without eating over the 7 days of Sukkah, by all means, you could do that and not eat in the Sukkah. Or, alternatively, you can have just simply achilas arai, and you can eat that outside the Sukkah as well. If you're going to eat a seudas keva, that has to be eaten in the Sukkah. That's the shita of the Chachamim, obviously the shita that we follow. And then yesterday we turned our attention to the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. All the shitas of Rabbi Eliezer are those that are not accepted lahalacha, but they are certainly, first of all, it's part of the corpus of Torah. So every time we go over a shita of Rabbi Eliezer, we're being mekayim the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And on top of that, just in of itself, it's interesting. Right, he has a really, really interesting position as it relates to sukkah, in that the person is really connected to a sukkah in a way in which it's hard for us to grasp. But number one, as we just went over yesterday, the number of meals that you have to have in a sukkah, 2 a day, where you're obligated to have 2 meals a day in the sukkah. Remember, somebody came over to him, an apotropos came over to him and said, "You know, I only have 1 meal a day on sukkah. So am I supposed to have 2?" And Rabbi Eliezer says, "Yeah, force yourself. Yeah, you're supposed to have 2 meals a day on sukkahs." That was number one. Number two is that you have to be in the same sukkah, the whole sukkah. So you can't move from one sukkah to another. Number three, we went over yesterday, you have to own your sukkah. Just like you have to own your dalet minim, which we're going to be discussing in a couple of days from now as we are about to begin the third perek. So you have to own your sukkah as well. So that means to say that for Rabbi Eliezer, you have to have full ownership of your sukkah that you're going to be living for 7 days where you're required to have 2 meals a day. Okay, that is a really, really strong relationship that a person has with a sukkah. That's all the shita Rabbi Eliezer. Yesterday we ended off with a story where Rabbi Eliezer was together with another Tana. I'll name him in just a moment. It was Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Eli. So he was in a sukkah with another Tana. The Gemara noted Rabbi Eliezer was outside of his own sukkah, which is strange. But the Gemara ended up pointing out it wasn't a sukkah on sukkahs. It was just they were in a sukkah, but not for the purpose of sukkahs. And the Gemara, and the Gemara pointed out it ended up being it was on a Shabbos. And the question that was posed to Rabbi Eliezer is that it's so hot. Could we just put a sheet up in order to put up a barrier against the sun? And so Rabbi Eliezer didn't give an answer, and he was being a little bit difficult in terms of answering the question. In fact, he didn't answer the question. Further, in fact, he kept changing the topic with every time that he was posed a question. Eventually, Rabbi Yochanan put up the sadan, he put up the sheet, and Rabbi Eliezer said, "Okay, thank you very much. It was lovely spending time with you," and he left. And he felt that it shouldn't have been done. He didn't answer the question. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Eliezer had a hanaga. He had a practice in which, if he didn't hear from his Rebbe, he wouldn't say it over. Okay. This brings us to where we are right now, Tanur Rabbanan. We are in Chav Ches Amud Aleph. We are 2 lines from the very top of the Amud. Maisa Rebbe Eliezer, Sheshavas Begala Ha'ayon. So there was an incident with Rebbe Eliezer. The Gemara clearly has a particular fascination as it relates to the Tanur Rebbe Eliezer. So we're continuing. He was up in the Gala Elyon, V'shalu Shoshim Halachas Ba'alacha Sukkah. So, and they asked him 30 shilas on sukkah. Shtemesar amar lehem shamati shmonasar, amar lehem lo shamati. So for 12 of them, he says, "Yeah, I know the answer, I heard, and therefore I'm going to repeat." And for 18 of them, he did not know the answer. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, amar chilaf advarim. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, is that you got most of the story right, but let me make just one small correction. And that is shmonasar amar lehem shamati, shtemesar amar lehem lo shamati. 18 of them he has a Masorah, and therefore he gave it over. 12 of them he did not have a Masorah. Amr lo, kol dvarecha eina ela mipi ha-shmua. And then the story continues, and they say to him, that's it? You're only going to say something over when you have a tradition from your Rebbeim? And Amr lehem, he's got tunin lomar dever shalosh shamati mipi rabosai. He says, okay, you forced my hand. I'm going to tell you something that I didn't hear in terms of my Rebbeim, meaning I'm going to give you a little bit of personal information. And once I give up some of the personal information, so then you're going to understand a lot better. Number one, mi amailo kadmuni adam bebeis ha-medrash. And number one, I was always in the beis ha-medrash first. Number two, v'lo yeshanti bebeis ha-medrash lo shenes keva v'lo shenes arai. I never took a nap in the beis ha-medrash. Number three, lo inachti adam bebeis ha-medrash v'yatzasi. I never left somebody in the beis ha-medrash. In other words, I was the first one there, last one to leave. Number four, v'lo sichati sichas chulin. And never did I have any kind of mundane discussion. I never just was shooting the breeze. I was always serious in every conversation that I had. And focused around Torah. And finally, number five, v'lo amarti davar shelo shamati mipi rabbi me'olam. Shelo shamati mipi rabbi, comma. And the only thing I say over is that from my Rebbeim. And as Rashi points out over here, in other words, what is he doing? He's boasting, he's bragging? Of course not. In other words, what he's doing over here is he's saying, look, in other words, if I don't know the answer, it's not for a lack of diligence, right? I was there in the base measures all the time. It just happens to be that that my tradition is that I only say things over that I know from my Rebbeim, that I have a Masorah, but if I don't know it, it's not because I happen not to hear it. I heard everything there was to hear, and I was learning all the time. Just happens to be that this is part of my Masorah, that I will only say something over that I heard from my Rebbeim. So he understood, by the way, that he was part of the Masorah. And as being part of the Masorah, so our job is to move it along from one generation to the next generation. And needless to say, he took it really seriously. Me'olam amru alav Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So fine. So after having gone over five personal hanhagas of Rabbi Eliezer, right? I counted, I numbered it in my Gemara. So now we're going to go over some personal hanhagas of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? A real treat of a daf today in terms of getting some personal practices of the earliest of the Gedolim. So here, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, me'olam amru alav al Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai mi'amav. Now, a lot of these are going to sound familiar, and yeah, that's exactly the point, meaning to be a Gadol. So there are certain common denominators. Lo sach sichas chulin. I never had a mundane conversation. And number two, v'lo alach dal amos b'lo tor v'lo tefillin. Anywhere I walked for amos, I was in Torah, I was wearing tefillin. And number three, v'lo kidmo adam b'beis ha-medrash. No one got to the beis ha-medrash before I did. And number four, v'lo yashem b'beis ha-medrash lo shenes kevav v'lo shenes arai. Didn't take a nap in the beis ha-medrash. Number five, lo hir b'mevuas hamatunafos. Alleyways that were dirty and that had a foul odor. And so I did not think about Torah in those areas. Number six, meaning so not only was he thinking about Torah all the time, but also he controlled his thoughts. So that when there was not time to learn Torah, so that he stopped. Number six, v'loiniach adam beveis medrash v'yatza. I never left someone in the beis medrash, meaning I was last to go. Number seven, v'lomasa adam yoshev v'domei mele yoshev v'shoneh. You're never going to just see me sitting around. All right, I'm always going to go over some Torah. Number eight, v'lo pasach adam delas l'tamidav elohu ba'atzmo. He opened up the doors for his students. This one's an interesting one, right? Generally, of course, the halach is that you're supposed to have kavod harav. Kavod harav would typically mean that you open the door for your Rebbe, but he also understood that he was there for his students. And being there for his students meant that physically he would open the door for his students. Number nine, v'lo amar davar shelo shamar mipi rabba me'olam. He also had this trait where he only said something that he heard from his Rebbeim. And finally, number 10, v'lo amar higia eis lama bebeis ha-medrash. He never closed base measures. He always had the base measures open, with two notable exceptions, chutz me'arvi psachim v'arvi yom kippurim, except for Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur. So Erev Yom Kippur, that's an easy one. Erev Yom Kippur, so there's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So he closed the base measures, so everyone would go home and eat. Now Erev Pesach, so what's the function of closing the base measures on Erev Pesach? So this one's a little bit tricky. Now it happens to be that not so long ago, it's been a minute, since we were there in the 10th Perek of Pesachim. So we went over this Gemara back in the 10th Perek of Pesachim. So over there, Rashi and Tosfos have, or the Rashbam and Tosfos there, have a more involved discussion in terms of what exactly was the purpose of closing the Beis Medrash early in the afternoon of Erev Pesach. So if you remember over there, it was either Rashi or the Rashbam, okay, that said that you got to basically tuck your kids in for a nap. In other words, you got to go home and you got to give your kids a nap. Okay, it's a little, right, Tosfos over there was a little bit bothered. What do you mean? The father has to go and give his kids a nap, right? The mother's perfectly capable of having the kids take a nap. Okay. Anyway, so it is certainly a little bit of a challenge to understand what was the need of closing the yeshiva on Erev Pesach. If you remember Tosfos over there in Pesachim, so Tosfos over there says that it's not Erev Pesach, but rather it's Lel Pesach. And that means to say that, you know why he closed the Beis Medrash? So that people would go home and start the Seder. No, okay, that was Tosfos over there in Pesachim. So, next line of the Gemara.
They learned together, right?
Yeah.
So, how did they both get to be the first one in this
matter? Vechein, Hayah Rabbi Eliezer, Tamido, Noeg Acharav. And that's the very next line. And that the Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So now we know. Now we know that Rabbi Eliezer gets from Yochanan ben Zakkai. As far as the two of them, which one got there to the Beis Medrash first. So, when they were both learning the Beis Medrash, I don't know if we needed to, you know, keep score of who got there first. In other words, the basic idea is that they got there early. They got there very early.
Rabbi Eliezer is the Talmud.
Rabbi Eliezer is the Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Rabbi Eliezer attributes are him describing himself, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It says, Imro Lav, he describes what he's thinking in the Mavli.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Right. And how can, right.
Someone else saying what he's thinking.
Right, correct. So again, they must have, I would imagine that there, you know, in other words, his lips are always moving. In other words, that's one of his practices, is that he always, you know, he always was saying things over. And so I guess as he was walking through these alleyways, he stopped talking, or he stopped articulating. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, so far today, a discussion regarding Rabbi Eliezer, a discussion regarding the Hanagos of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Gemara continues with a Braisa. Shmonim, Talmidim. There were 80 students. Hayula lehila zakein. Shloshim mehem ru'uyim shetishra alem shechina kemoshe rabbeinu. So as far as 30 of them are concerned, so they could have ashras hashechina. Now, probably what the Gemara means is that they were worthy to have ashras hashechina like Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? We have no Navi historically like Moshe Rabbeinu. That's number one. Number two, of course, we're at the Tekufa of the Tanayim. So there was no Nevuah during the Tekufa of the Tanayim. Right, Nevuah came to an end by the beginning of Bayesheni. Right, Shimon HaTzadik was Meshariari Anshe Knesset Segedola, and it was only at that point in time that there was the last of the Nevi'im, Chag, Zechari Malachi. So there were they were the last of them, which means that from that point going forward, so there were no Nevi'im. So what the Gemara probably means over here is that they were at a level where they could have had that kind of Ashras Hashchina. Now, for 30 of them, they could stop the sun like Yehoshua ben Nun. So, in other words, they had that kind of zchuyos and that kind of hanhaga. And so far, we counted now for 60 of the 80 students, and Esrim beinonim, and 20 of them were beinonim. Okay, right, like in every class. Okay, you have outstanding students, and you have regular students. And that's, you know, right? Good. Right. As a parent, by the way, your kid, of course, is of the outstandings, but, you know, okay, good. So, Gadol Shebekolan Yonasan ben Uziel, Kan Shebekolan Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So, the greatest of them was Yonasan ben Uziel, and the smallest of them was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And we say of them, by the way, so it's a little bit unclear which grouping are we talking about? Meaning that first we went over the full number 80, and then within the 80, then we subdivided of the 30 having the ability to have Nevuah, 30 of them having the ability to have the sun stop, and then 20 Beinonim, 20 average. So then when we're saying that Rav Yonasan ben Uziel is at the top and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is at the bottom of which grouping? Not clear.
What's the criteria for the rank of
20? I don't know. I don't know.
Could be the
20. Right? Could be. Amru Alava Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now, a description of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, obviously, aside from being, of course, part of the Baal Masorah, he was a leader of the Jewish people, right? The Gemaras in Gittin talk about how he basically saved Yiddishkeit after Churban Bayis Sheni. The Gemara over there goes through much discussion about how, right, even just the story of how he escaped Yerushalayim. But when he approached the Roman Caesar, so his His demands were basically the continuity of the Jewish people, right? I need a refuah for Rabbi Tzadok. I need Rabbi Gamliel Beis Dino should continue. In other words, basically, he was responsible for the continuity, and he ended up becoming the Nasi. He's the leader of the Jewish people. And over here, it's describing him as a student of Hillel HaZaken, being the, you know, ranked the lowest, okay? The Shaloi Niach, Mikra Mishnah, Gemara, Halachas, Vagaros, Diktuke Torah, from Kal Mechamorim, Gezer Shavos, Tkufos, Gematria, Sichas, Malach, Esher, Sichas, Shedim, Sichas, Tekalim, Mashalos, Kofsim, Mashalos, Shualim, Davar Gadol, Vedavar Katan. And I'll just keep reading a little bit more. Davar Gadol, Maisim, Merkava, Davar Katan, Havar, Sabai, Verava. Lekai Mashinemar, Lahan, Chil, Oavai, Yeshva, Tosem, Emale. Okay. And as far as what Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai knew, he knew everything. But everything, of course, over here includes every aspect of Torah. So if I could just give quick definitions over here to the things that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai learned within the field of Torah. So number one, he learned Mikra Mishnah, the kind of self-evident, Gemara. So Gemara over here, how is the Tana learning Gemara? So Rashi says, because all Gemara is a better understanding of the Mishnayos. In other words, the Mishnayos are basically, that's the skeletal structure of Torah Shabbat Peh. And then, good, but then, of course, the skeleton just, you know, it basically holds everything up, but it's not fully formed until you have understanding. So the Havana and the Mishnayos, that's what's called Gemara. So when we're describing Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai learning Gemara, it's basically Havana within the Mishnayos. Halachas, says Rashi, is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Right, all the halacha Moshe Misinai Rashi over here. I'm not going to go through the Rashi. Gives a potpourri of examples of what exactly is halacha Moshe Misinai. Agado, self-evident. Diktukei Torah v'diktukei Sofrim. So Rashi says that when we're describing diktukei Torah and diktukei Sofrim, we're basically talking about the gzeros that were enacted by the chachamim. Kalim v'chamorim, that's kavachomer. Again, self-evident. Gzereshav, also self-evident. Kufos. So Rashi says that's astronomy. Right, to know Torah also means it requires us to know astronomy. Right, we have to know how the month, how the sun operates, how the moon operates, the schedule of the sun and the moon, the interplay, the intersection of the sun and the moon, all those things that we need to know. So that's also part of Torah. Gematria. So gematria is over here. Rashi says gematria is from both an agadic standpoint and a halachic standpoint. Rashi gives the example. That we know a Stam Nazir is 30 days. So you declare yourself to be a Nazir without giving a number of how many days you're going to be. That's for 30 days. And that halacha is based on a gematria. There are an extraordinarily limited number of halachos that are derived from gematrias. Most of the time, the vast majority of the time, gematria is there to give us nice ideas, right? Decodings of the Torah, but decodings from an agadic standpoint. Rare is the time that we have a gematria giving us a halacha. The Nazir example is one.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
And right, there's a Tosos in the beginning of Masechta Gittin, right? That's good. It's good memory. That says that the get is 12 lines because the letters Gimel Tes make up 12. But that's not even in the Gemara, and it doesn't have to be 12 lines, meaning it's just simply, it's a remez. It's whatever. Okay. I'm strapped to think of another example of a gematria that gets us to a halacha. Okay? Let's move on. Sichas malach yashar sichas shedim, sichas dekalim. So Rashi says over here, I'm tapped out, meaning the conversations of malachim and that of shedim. So I don't know what that is. And okay. And so I'm with Rashi. Mashalos kofsim, mashalos shualim. Okay. Now, in terms of parables over here, so basically storytelling. But in other words, storytelling that involves launders, that involves foxes. Now, and storytelling is part and parcel of Torah. Yeah. In other words, the way Rashi describes it, you're giving Musar, you're giving Tochacha. So to just come out and say it, right, this is what you need to correct, and this is how you need to improve. So people don't want to hear that. So what you have to do is you have to couch it in a story. So good. So that's exactly how Rashi describes it. You couch it in a story. Now, Davar Gadol Davar Katan. So Rashi over here says, well, the Gemara says, Davar Gadol is Maisa Merkava. So that's the more esoteric teachings of the Torah. You and I probably would describe it as Kabbalah, but I don't know what Kabbalah is. So but they're the more esoteric teachings of the Torah. And Davar Katan, so it's so funny. Davar Katan, that's what you and I learn. Or, right, I'll speak for myself. That's what I learn. In other words, that's the Havais Abaye and Rava. Abaye and Rava are going over the basic questions that come up all the time throughout Chas. So that's Davar Katan. That's a smaller part of Torah. So right now, what are we equipped to learn? So we're equipped to learn the smaller part of Torah, right? We're not equipped to learn the more esoteric teachings of the Torah. Fine. So that's the Davar Katan. And, okay, good. V'chi me'achar, picking it up right where we left off in the Gemara. V'chi me'achar shekatan shebekulan kach gadol shebekulan achas kama v'kama. Now imagine that we just described Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, who had mastery over the entirety of Torah. And he was the Katan. So now can we imagine for a moment Yonasan ben Uziel? Now we don't have to imagine, as the Gemara is about to tell us. Amar alav Yonasan ben Uziel b'shash yoshev v'osek b'torah kol ov sheparech alav miyad nisraf. So as it relates to Yonasan ben Uziel, so as he was learning Torah, so you had a bird flying over his head and the bird blew up, all right, incinerated. How come the bird incinerated? So it's interesting. Rashi writes over here, Malachim gathered together to hear the Torah of Yonasan ben Uziel. So basically the Malachim now are running right into the bird, or the bird is running into the Malachim that's hovering above his head. Tosus says a little bit differently. You can see the top Tosus over here. Right, call Ov Shaparech Lami Anisraf Shahadvarim Smechim Kinesina Sam Besinai. When Yonasan ben Uziel was learning Torah, it was a reenactment of Sinai. Shenazna Torah Be'esh Ukiinyan Zematina Bemezhish Be'uvda de Rebbe Eliezer Rav Yeshua Shayu Mesumim Besuda Velia Taha Esh Sevivam. This idea that when you do such a good job of recreating Maamad Har Sinai, so we know by Maamad Har Sinai, a fire descended right onto the mountain. So, if you're doing a good enough job of recreating, so the same thing's going to happen. That's the way Tosus describes how the bird blows up or incinerates over the head of Yonasan ben Uziel.
So, Gotel the Kotan has nothing to do with the knowledge, because there's nothing you could add to the knowledge of Rabbi.
Sounds that way. Yeah.
The intensity of how you.
Right, the intensity, there's certain madrigas that they arrived at.
Yeah,
it sounds that way.
The knowledge.
Correct. Mishnah. Okay, we are in Chav Chesam and Aleph now, continuing in the Mishnah, Misha Yarosha Veruba Besuka V'Shulchan B'Socha Bayis. So hopefully this sounds familiar. We did this much early in the Masechta, second day of the Masechta. So we quoted this Mishnah. So your head and the majority of your body is in the Sukkah, but your Shulchan is in the house. Now, if you remember, there really are two different issues that are being encrypted over here in this Mishnah. If we go back and just remind ourselves what we learned just a short 4 weeks ago here in the beginning of the Masechta. And that is that there are two issues. One is the Sukkah Gedola, where you are in your Sukkah. The Sukkah is of a proper size. It just happens to be that you're the edge of the Sukkah and your table is not in your Sukkah, but it's outside the Sukkah. Right? We described it earlier as being inside your house. Remember that your Sukkah abutted your home. So that means to say that you're sitting in the sukkah, but the tables are now inside the house. And even though technically speaking, you're in the sukkah, but because your table's inside the house, so now the concern, the fear would be is that you're going to lean over in order to eat, and you're going to move yourself outside the sukkah. So is that going to be an acceptable sukkah? So machlok, b'shem Beishamai and Beisil. Beishamai says it would be pasul, and Beisil says that it would be kosher. And the reason why Beishamai says it's pasul is because the rabbis were concerned. The rabbis made a gzera that you're not allowed to set up your sukkah like that. And if you do so then you are violating the gzera derabbanan. And presumably, the chachamim basically stripped you of the mitzvah of sukkah. This is one of those instances. We saw this all the way back on Daf Gimel, where we do paskin like Beis Shammai on this regard, not like Beis Hillel. It's a rarity, but this is one of those incidents. There also happens to be another issue, as we also discussed back on Daf Gimel, and that is going to be the dimensions of your small sukkah. What is the smallest allowable sukkah? So we said already 7x7 tfachim. Back on Daf Gimel, the Gemara understood that was also part of this discussion over here. Maybe related, not necessarily, but anyway, the smallest dimensions of a sukkah. If the sukkah could fit your head, the majority of your body, and the really small table, so then you have a kosher sukkah. But if your sukkah can't even fit that, so then you don't have a kosher sukkah. So, Misha Hayarosha Veruba Besukkah V'Shulchan B'Socha Bayis B'Shamay Posum U'Beisilam Machshirin. So fine. So that we just went over that. Amru Lahem Beisilam Beishamay Lokach Yemaisa Shachu Zikne Beishamay V'Zikne Beisilam Levaker Es Rav Yochanan Ben Acharanis U'Matzusha Yayoshev Rosha Veruba Besukkah V'Shulchan B'Socha Bayis V'Lo Amru Lo Davar. So Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, don't you remember? We went to go visit Rav Yochanan Hacharanis, and he configured a sukkah exactly like we just described. He was in the sukkah. The table was in the house. And everyone was fine. No one protested. No one said anything. Amr lem beishamay. Beishamay says to Beis Hillel, misham raya. Af heim amru lo. Im ken ha'isa noeg lo kiyanta mitzvah sukkah mi'amecha. If that's how you conducted yourself, you have never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. Now the back and forth over here is a little bit difficult. They're basically arguing about what happened. Meaning we were there. That's how we configured a sukkah. At that point in time, we have an agreement to those were the facts. And then afterwards, was there a protest? Was there not a protest? Was he censored for that action? So the back and forth is basically, Basil says he was not censored for that action. Beishama says, no, he was. So it's a little bit difficult just in terms of the machlokas over here seems to be centered around what happened or what did not happen. Nashim ve'avadim ve'ketanim peturim min asukah. The Gemara over here gives us what seems to be really basic information, and that is women, slaves, and ketanim are going to be exempt from sukkah. As far as women are concerned, sukkah is a mitzvah esei shazman grabma. It's a time-bound mitzvah. So like every time-bound mitzvah, they're going to be pater. Right? Reminder, there are not that many out there of time-bound mitzvahs. When all is said and done, it comes out to under a dozen mitzvahs min haTorah that are a positive time-bound mitzvah. Anyway, so fine. So women are exempt. An eved's obligation to mitzvahs is the same as a woman. So he's also going to be exempt. Also really basic information. And the Gemara later is going to ask the question, it's such basic information, like, why do I need a mishnah to tell me that? And ketanim. Now, ketanim are going to be putter from sukkah. The truth of the matter is ketanim are putter from all mitzvahs. Aye. What happens when the katan gets to a certain age and that now there's chinuch? Next line of the mishnah. Katan she'enu tzarech le'imo chayav besukkah. Well, the mishnah actually confuses us a little bit because the mishnah says that when you have a katan who is no longer needs his mother, meaning he has arrived at a chinuch age, so he's going to be chayav in sukkah. So the Mishnah, immediately after telling us that a katan is exempt from sukkah, then the Mishnah says, oh, but when he reaches a certain age, he's going to be chayav in sukkah. So the easiest way to understand the Mishnah, which will be the Gemara's way to understand the Mishnah, is that the first statement of the Mishnah is describing a child who has not yet arrived at the age of chinuch. And then the second line that we just covered is talking about a child who's arrived at the age of chinuch. That's a simple way to explain the Mishnah, and the Gemara will do exactly that. And then one final story here in the Mishnah where the daughter-in-law of Shammai HaZaken, so she just had a baby on Sukkos, and so she was sitting in some sort of hut, but it wasn't the Kasher Sukkah. So the instructions that Beit Shammai said is, you know what? Let's convert this into a Kasher Sukkah. And so what they did is they removed the Ma'aziva. That's that layer of pitch right over. So now all you have are just the wood on top, the wooden planks on top. And now a kosher sukkah is created. For his daughter-in-law, no. For the newborn baby. The Gemara itself is going to raise the obvious question. Newborn baby? That is a katan shetzarech li'imo. There is no requirement whatsoever for that infant to be sitting in a sukkah. What is happening over there? The Gemara is going to ask that question. Well, presumably what he would have to do is also manipulate the schach. It's an excellent point. But if you manipulate the schach, so then you're good.
Right.
And it seems to be a sukkah on sukkahs. Another really excellent, it's an outstanding point. I don't have a response. Okay, good. Minahani Mili, the Gemara wants to know, so where do I know this? Tan Rabbanan. Ezrach ze Ezrach. Okay, the Torah's description of who's responsible to sit in the sukkah is that all ezrachim, all citizens have to be in a sukkah. Okay, part of the Gemara's discussion today is that when we say the word, when the Torah uses the word ezrach, is that reference to men and women? What's the default of an ezrach? Is that men and women or is it just men? So stay tuned. As that will become clear in a moment. Ha ezrach lehotzi es anashim. So when it says ha ezrach, it comes to exclude women. So right now, here's what we think, that the word Ezrach is an inclusive term that includes both men and women. And then when the Torah says Ha Ezrach, that's coming to exclude women. Okay, that's what we think right now. Just give the Gemara a little bit of time because all this is going to be clarified and the Gemara is going to really try to straighten everything out. Kol Lirabos Es HaKetanim. Now when it says Kol, so that comes to include children. Okay, so the Gemara says, we have a lot of explaining to do, let's go. Amar Mar Hezrach Lotzias Anashim Lamema De Ezrach Bein Nashim Bein Gavrei Mashma. So the Gemara says, here's what you're saying. You're saying that the word Ezrach in the Torah is including both men and women. V'atanya, the Gemara says, okay, but I have another brisa for you. Ha-Ezrach lar, rabos es ha-nashim, ha-Ezrachio she-chayav is be-inui. So the brisa tells us that as it relates to Yom Kippur in the mitzvah of inui, that you have to afflict yourself. So ha-Ezrach is coming to include women, meaning that the word Ezrach by itself only means men, and the hay over there is coming to be a ribui and telling us that women are also included in inui as well. Okay, now, in a moment, this also needs clarification. The mitzvah of inui, of abstaining and afflicting ourselves in Yom Kippur, so that is obviously true for both men and women. And what it sounds like for now from our Gemara is that we need a drasha to get us to that location. We need a drasha to get us to that location. Inui on Yom Kippur, that's a lav in the Torah. You don't afflict yourself on Yom Kippur, subject to kares. Of course women are included in that. Why do I need a drasha to get there? So hold that thought for a moment. That's another thing that needs clarification. Alma Ezrach Gavre Mashma. But right now, what comes out clearly over here is that Ezrach is only a reference to men, not to women. So Alma Rabbi Hilchasa Ninevas Mechin Rabbana Akrai. So the Gemara says, okay, it's Halach LaMoshe Misinai, and really what we have over here is just an Asmachta. But the pasuk itself is not to be taken and understood literally. Okay, so now here's the part that is all too confusing, and we need clarification. So we know that we have the word Ezrach as it relates to the mitzvah of Sukkah. We have the word Ezrach as it relates to Inui of Yom Kippur. What we don't know at this point in time is what's the default and what cuts against the default. One of those occasions Ezrach is to be taken literally, and the other occasion is it's not to be taken literally. Which one's which? That's the Gemara's question. Hi, Krav, Hilchasa Vesukra Lamali. Hilchasa Lamali. Hasukka Mitzvah Shazman Grama, Vachal Mitzvah Shazman Grama, Nashim Peturos, Yom Kippur and Midrav Yehud Amarav Navka. Dam Rav Yehud Amarav, Vachain Tanan Debe Rabbi Yishmal, Amarkra Ish O Isha, Ha Hishva Akasav Isha Li Ish, Lechol Onshin Shabbatara. The Gemara says, I'm so confused now. Let's set up all the questions. First of all, Ezrach, what's the default of Ezrach? That's question number one. Number two, why do I need a single drasha over here? Let's spell this out. As far as the mitzvah sukkah is concerned, without a drasha, I would have arrived at the correct conclusion, which is the mitzvah of sukkah is a mitzvah seseh shazman grama. Women are exempt from mitzvah seseh shazman grama. So you tell me women are exempt and you tell me it's based on some sort of drasha, I don't need a drasha. That's number one. Number two, the mitzvah of inui, Yom Kippur, I also would have known that. The mitzvah of Inu and Yom Kippur is a lav in the Torah, coupled with kares. We know that women are bound by every lav in the Torah, coupled, especially if it's coupled with kares, but even not. Women are bound by every lav in the Torah. All right, the Gemara in Kedushin has three notable exceptions. We're not going to go through them right now. Good. So anyway, so just to set everything up, number one, what's the default of the term Ezrach? And number two, why do I even need a drasha over here? I don't need a drasha over here. So the Gemara to all these questions answers as follows. So Amar Abai, La'olam Sukkah Hilchasa. Really, the Sukkah is Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. V'itzterich, and I need it. Because Salka Datcha Amina Teshuva Kein Tadura Madira Ish V'Ishto Av Sukkah Ish V'Ishto Kamash Malan. I would have entertained a very serious Havamina that women should be obligated in the mitzvah of Sukkah. Why? Because the Pasuk says Teshuva. And as we've been saying now numerous times in the last couple of days, Teshuva Kein Taduru. You live in your sukkah like you live in your house. Now, who lives in your house? So, a family unit, husband, wife, children. So I would have said the same thing should be true regarding the sukkah itself. And that would have led me to the conclusion that women are obligated in sukkah. That's the havamina, and therefore I need a drasha, a special drasha by sukkah. Rava Amar Yitzirich, Rava says it's necessary. Sakadach, Amina Yalav, Chamisha Asar, Mechaga Matzos, Malala Nashim, Chayavas, Afkan Nashim, Chayavas, Kamash Malan. Abai gives us another reason why I would have thought women are obligated in the mitzvah of Sukkah. And again, we go back to the Gzeres Shava, connecting the first night of Sukkot with the first night of Pesach. Now, on the first night of Pesach, women are obligated in the mitzvah of matzah. Matzah is a mitzvah seseh shazman grama, and women are obligated to eat matzah. Why? So Rashi over here goes through. We saw this back in the 10th parak of Pesachim, because there's a connection between the Isser of Chametz and the mitzvah of matzah. Who's ever bound by the Isser of Chametz is obligated in the mitzvah of matzah. Women are bound by the Isser of Chametz and therefore obligated in the mitzvah of matzah. So women are obligated to eat matzah. So I would have thought, well, if they're obligated to eat matzah, so therefore they're obligated to sit in the sukkah. That's the Havamina through the Gzeres Shava. And that's why I need a special drasha. Okay. V'hashta da'amar tzuka hilchasa kra lamale. Okay, now, so the so sukkah now is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, meaning that we just produced two havamin is why I would have thought women are obligated. Therefore, I need a special limud. In this case, it's halach l'moshe mi-Sinai that tells me that women are exempt. So then why do I have the pasuk? Oh, and by the way, right, Rashi makes this point really clear. I missed an opportunity, but let me go back. And as far as the word ezrach is concerned, so what is ezrach? Ezrach means men. Meaning the word ezrach by itself is a reference to men. So that means that when you go back to the pasuk ha ezrach lahotzi es anashem, so that actually now is a drasha. In other words, the word ezrach is men, and ha ezrach is coming to exclude ezrach is men, ha ezrach lahotzi es anashem. Yeah, sorry, it's right. It comes out now that the hay over there is not really sourcing the halacha. Right, because the word ezrach is men, and it only applies to men, and the fact that there's a hay over there, the Gemara says that's not to be taken literally. That's just whatever. But as far as the exclusion of women are concerned, that's being generated by the halach l'moshe mi-Sinai. Okay, and finally, v'hashta da'amar tzuka hilchasa kra lamali. So then why do I need the pasuk? Meaning, when it comes to sukkah now, it's all really being generated by halach l'moshe mi-Sinai. So what's the pasuk coming to teach me? L'rabbis is a gerim. It's coming to include gerim. Why? So sakadach amina ezrach b'Yisrael amarech mena v'lo asa gerim kamash malan. Because I might have thought that ha ezrach is coming to tell me that a ger is not chayiv in the mitzvah of sukkah. And the word, and the hey over there is coming to include gerim. Okay. So that is all now a clarified understanding of the halachas of men, women by sukkah. So again, by the mitzvah of sukkah, men are obligated, not women. Even though we have a standard rule of a mitzvah seseh shazman grama where women are going to be exempt, and that would have applied over here, but there are two reasons that the Gemara offered in terms of why I thought women should be obligated, and therefore a drasha, but not a drasha. Really, halach l'moshe mi-Sinai that says over here that really women are exempt. Okay. And what about the word ezrach by sukkah? That's coming to teach me about a ger. Okay. And just to clarify that point a little bit better, in other words, why do we sit in the sukkah? Because in the midbar we were in sukkahs. The gerim, obviously, is post-midbar. So that's why I might have thought that they have no shaychus to the sukkah. So we have a pasuk that tells us, no, that once you become a ger, you're chayv in the mitzvah of sukkah. Okay. Now we go to Yom Kippur just to finish up this thread of the Gemara. Yom HaKippur midrav Yehuda Merav Nafka. So by Yom Kippur, now it comes out that we actually have a drasha that tells me that women are chayv in the mitzvah of inui. Don't we know that already? In other words, it's a law in the Torah. So why do I need a drasha over here? And here it's a drasha, meaning because the word ezrach is referenced to men, and ha-ezrach is coming to include women. But why do I need a drasha? I know it based on the basic rules. It's a law in the Torah, and women are bound by all the law in the Torah. It's so good you said that. I was thinking the same thing also, right? The question that was posed was that v'inisim es nafsho seichem is the way the Torah phrases it, it sounds more like an essay and less like a lav. You remember back in the eighth parak of Yuma, the Gemara really struggled to try to figure out a way in which the Torah could say inui b'derech lav. All right. It's very good. And our Gemara over here certainly treats it like a lav. Okay. Right. Very good. So, lo nitzricha ela l'tosefes inui. So the Gemara says that we know that on Yom Kippur we have what's called tosefes inui. That not only do you have to fast on Yom Kippur proper, but you have to augment, you have to add a little bit of fasting, both on the front and on the back end of Yom Kippur. And this is what's called Tosefes Inui. Sakadat chamina hol umiyat rechmana. Let Tosefes Inui me enosh umi azara. So we happen to know also that even though there is a mitzvah to fast a little bit before Yom Kippur, if you decide not to fast during that extended period, so you don't violate a formal law of the Torah, and you're not subject to kares. That only is for not fasting on the actual day of Yom Kippur itself. Rashi over here goes through the drasha, be'itzumo shel yom, Anyway, so here's what I might have thought. That this extended period of time, both before and after Yom Kippur, so since it doesn't have with it, carry with it, neither the Azhara nor the Enosh of Kares, so I might have thought that women should not are not included in this extended period. So lo nischayv anashim klal kamash malan. Now that's the Havamina. That's why I need a drasha by Yom Kippur to tell me that women are not only included in fasting in Yom Kippur that we knew already, but even on the extended period, women are obligated as well. Amar. But that's the basic mitzvah. And then on top of that, I need a drasha for women because I might have thought that women are not included. So the Gemara notes what seems to be a simple discrepancy in the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah says that children are exempt. Then the Mishnah says that a child who's of an age of chinuch is obligated. The Gemara gives the answer, which I already gave back in the Mishnah. But the Gemara says, okay, very, very simple. That once the child arrives at a certain age where he's of a teachable age, so then you're at that point in time obligated to teach him about the mitzvah of sukkah, train him in the mitzvah of sukkah. So the Gemara says, okay, but you have, it sounds like there's a drasha over here. No, midrabanan v'kras machtabamo. No. Of course, chinuch is a din derabanan. The pasuk over here just serving as an asmachta. Okay. Kanchi nitzarach li'imo. When the child no longer needs his mother, so it's at that point in time that the, that there is now a mitzvah of chinuch. So what age is it? So you're going to find this all the time whenever the Gemara is talking about chinuch. In the third paragraph, we're going to be very specific about more examples about chinuch. Rarely you're going to find the Gemara giving an age. And very simple. Because when it comes to the mitzvah of chinuch, it really depends on being developmentally prepared. And there is no standard age that you can give. It's so interesting. Back in the eighth paragraph of Yuma, so we did talk about a year, 2 years prior to turning bar bas mitzvah, where they have to start fasting as chinuch. So over there, we kind of touched on an age, but over here, it's just there is no one standard objective age that you can give. It really just it depends on the child's cognitive ability and his developmental readiness in order to do a mitzvah. So over here, the Gemara is going to try to give some sort of threshold, some sort of standard of when the child has reached the age of chinuch. So, you go to the bathroom, you don't need your mother to wipe you. Okay, now you're at the age of chinuch. And another point, by the way, just a general point, it could be that chinuch ages will differ based on the mitzvah that we're talking about, right? Certain mitzvahs require more developmental preparedness. I'll give you a wonderful example, and that's the mitzvah of tefillin, right? By the mitzvah of tefillin, so we know that that when does chinuch start for tefillin, right? A month before bar mitzvah. Some have it a week before, right? But it's, in other words, you're at 9, 10 years of age, right? No child is putting on tefillin. There, tefillin, you need to go fnaki. You need to be in a really proper state. So there, we really push off the chinuch of tefillin until they're almost at the age of bar mitzvah. Again, because there's no standard age of chinuch, and chinuch is not going to be the same for every mitzvah in the Torah. Okay. So we already went through the first example. Second example. Reish Lakish, Rabbi Shimon Malakish, Amar Kol Shaneir Mishnah Sova, Eino Kara Ima. So you wake up and you don't call out for your mother. So the Gemara says, Ima Gedolam Nami Karu. What do you mean? Everyone calls out for the mother when they wake up. And when the Gemara says everybody, what the Gemara probably means is that, you know, a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old, so when they wake up and whatever, sometimes they call for the mother. So Ella Ema Koshinerva Inokara Ima Ima. Now the Gemara says we're talking about a scenario in which you just keep calling out until she comes. So if you're still holding by that, so then you're not at the age of chinuch. But you call out one time, you realize she's not coming. Okay, that's, you're at the age of chinuch. Maisa v'yalda kalaso, maisa l'estor chesur mechzav achi ketani. What about the story of Shammai and his daughter-in-law just having a baby? And Shammai now makes a sukkah for his infant grandson. So the Gemara says, Shammai, and that definitely goes against the previous point of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, V'achi ketani. I'm sorry, Chesur Mechzer V'achi ketani. We have a little bit of chunk of Mishnah missing. Here's the missing part of the Mishnah. V'shamay machmir. Shamay is a machmir. U'maisenami v'yalda kalasar shoshamay. Ezakin u'pichas ma'aziva v'sichech alamita b'shvala katan. And how machmir was Shammai? Oh, I'll answer that question. He was so machmir that he made a sukkah for his newborn grandson. He made a sukkah. That's how machmir he was. Okay, that's a chomer. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up with the Mishnah. Let's quickly recap. Let's review our daf. Chav Chesam Ad Aleph, the top of the Amud. We talked about the Hanagas of Rabbi Eliezer, of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We gave a description of the students of Hillel, Zakkai, and 80 in total. We broke it up into 30, 30, and 20. We talked about the greatest of them being Yonasan ben Uzziel, and the smallest of them being Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. As far as Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's mastery of Torah, it was complete mastery of Torah. The Gemara goes through every aspect in which Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai had mastery over Torah. How Rav Yonasan ben Uzziel was the greatest, give me an example. The Gemara gives us an example of the greatness of Rav Yonasan ben Uzziel when he was learning Torah. The Mishnah Chav Ches Amud Aleph, first describes a person who's sitting in a sukkah, but his table is outside of the sukkah. Machlok is Beishamai and Beisela, one of those rare moments in Shas where we pass like Beishamai. Lo kiyam to sukkah miyamecha. That's not a kiyam of the mitzvah of sukkah if your table is not in the sukkah. The Mishnah continues with the peturim of women, slaves, and children. A child, however, who has arrived at the age of chinuch, so such a child is obligated now midin chinuch, in the mitzvah of sukkah. And then the Mishnah ended up by telling us a story, an incident with Shammai, who made a sukkah for his newborn grandson. The Gemara, first of all, gave us the word ezrach. Is that include men, women, just men? Gemara ended up saying that it's just the standard term ezrach is just for men. The word ezrach is used both by sukkah and by the mitzvah of inui of Yom Kippur. And now, what is it coming to teach us? So when it comes to sukkah, so when all said and done, it comes to teach us nothing. Nothing. The women are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, on one hand, it's a mitzvah sese shasman grama. On the other hand, Abai and Rava both gave us legitimate havamim, why I thought women should be obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. And now we have Allah Moshe Messina that tells us that they're not obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. Okay. And now when it comes to inui of Yom Kippur, so women are obligated, they're bound by the mitzvah of inui. So then what do I have a drasha for? We have a drasha. So that comes to include women. So that's not for the mitzvah of inui, that's for the mitzvah of Tosefes inui. Because Tosefes inui has with it not elav, not kares. So I might have thought women are exempt, that's why I need a drasha to include women. We gave a parameter of chinuch. At what point in time is a child considered at the age of chinuch for the mitzvah of sukkah? The Gemara gave two opinions. One, when the child wipes himself after having gone to the bathroom. And number two is when the child does not call out constantly towards his mother. And finally, last and not least, the Chumra of Beis Shammai, where Beis Shammai says that an infant is going to require a sukkah. And that's what the Mishnah is telling us, is that Beis Shammai is taking a machmir position, which again is not the accepted viewpoint, but that's Shitas Beis Shammai. Adkan.